It's my pleasure to introduce Rebecca Riskind Teddy. Rebecca has been married to her husband, Dennis, for more than 30 years and has four mostly grown children. An experienced spiritual director and the co-founder of the popular local retreat center, Our Lady of Bethesda. She now works as the executive director of the Chioka Center for Principled Entrepreneurship at Catholic University of America's Wish School of Business. She co-hosts the Prosper podcast with Andreas Widmer, where they discuss the wide varieties of kinds of entrepreneurs and the importance, no matter your position, or the wide variety, or role of thinking like an owner. They share their experiences trying to build a challenging culture within a company and the role of calculated risk-taking in entrepreneurship. They conclude by discussing the role of providence and trust in the entrepreneurial journey. So without further ado, here's Rebecca.
Thank you. I will go up there in a second, but I'm just wanted to start with this because I'm super delighted to be here. But I'm curious to know, because this is a smaller group, I'm curious to know what you're hoping for from a talk about women and work. So it will make a difference what I emphasize in my talk. So I'm curious to know what you think.
That brings out the worst at me going to work.
Work brings out the worst.
Just how I can shine God's light through me to other people at my work.
Okay, thank you. How many you heard her say, I want to be able to shine God's light through me in my workplace. How many of you, that's the main reason you're here?
Yeah.
Anyone else? Somebody with a different reason for being here, a different question that you're affirming? Yes.
I want to be able to bring God authentically into my profession. And when people state that they don't wish that God has a place in my profession, I'm an attorney, the judicial branch of the government, separation of church and state, that I can bring God to my work with authenticity and, just have the discernment and the wisdom to be able to talk about why I feel that I should be able to do that.
Yeah, so some of you are here because you want to know how you shine outward, and some of us are here to think about how to actually change our professions for the better. Is that right? Do I see a hand up over there? Well, let's be bold. Why not? Jake, were you going to add something? Let me give you a mic.
You guys are so Catholic grade school. It would be so much awesome, so much better in a workshop if we could grab together. Anyway.
So, thank you. My reason of being here and I want to know is that how to overcome the fears of starting a credit business. Why should I say that I'm ready, or when should I say that I'm ready to start a business and feel that I'm okay, that I'm not going to the wrong world?
Fantastic. Those are all, thank you for sharing those. Those are all good, interesting reasons. And here's one more. And then I hope I'm going to address some of these. Some of them you might get disappointed because I'm not going to tell you what to do. But I hope to give you some tools that will help you frame your own way of thinking about these things.
Finding Christ in a primarily secular environment.
Sure.
I was very encouraged to see this as a young mom. I think there's a lot of pressure, even within the church, to be a stay-at-home mom, and I have felt very called to work part-time, and so I don't know that you're going to touch on that, but just that how God can have mothers in the workplace.
Thank you. I'm going to pay you later because that's what I'm going to start with. And that's what I wanted to talk about. So I am going to talk, I hope in the questions that we'll get to some specifics, because you're going to see there's not one size fits all answers. But I do want to open, let me tell you a little bit about myself. So about my own career, and to avoid feedback, I will stop here. So in my own career, I've done all kinds of things. I worked for a while as a pro-life lobbyist before I was married. And so I had a hard-charging power suit job on Capitol Hill where I walked around, trying to tell congressmen and women what to do.
And then I've worked in a whole series of, I would say, nonprofit Catholic-oriented apostolates, but that were my boss now at the Sioka Center said to me, Rebecca, what you are is a serial entrepreneur, because wherever you go, you've tried to solve a problem and you've started something. And that was what made him interested in bringing me on as the executive director of the Catholic University of America's Entrepreneurship Center, which is called the Sioka Center. And I've now been there since 2016, and I was so delighted to receive this invitation to speak with you, because I've now had close to 8 years watching young, aspiring businesswomen, and also in terms of visitors, a lot of us of very, very well settled and experienced entrepreneurs. And there's some things that I've seen that trouble me. And whenever I think I get troubled, I like to pray about it, and then I like to talk about it. So if you'll indulge me, there's some things that I want to just comment on that I see, and that I think it would help us a lot, because women are in our age. I don't mean at my age, but I mean in the time in which we live, women are, I think, uniquely filled with self-doubt, no matter what role in life they're called, they feel called to. And so I want to address some of those self-doubts as they play out in women who find themselves pressured one way or the other. So super delighted to be able to talk about these things this afternoon, but I want to start, well, I've already started, but I want to, the next thing I want to do is tell you what I'm not going to do and what this talk is not about. This talk is not a plea for women to enter the workforce if they're stay-at-home moms, and nor is it intended to be derogatory of stay-at-home moms. When my kids were little, I was one. My mom was one. Many, many people that I love and are my dear friends are this. And we all know this, right? This is the beginning of your question, right? It's like, we hear this all the time. And the question is, if I'm not called to that, is there any space for me? But I'll get to that, right? But there is nothing more important, and there is nothing that takes more intelligence, more creativity, more feminine genius, more flexibility, or more generosity than the work of not just birthing, but also raising to adulthood, to mature adulthood, young adults of good character. And our culture is very, very capable, because we've all become de facto materialists, even if we would never, never profess materialism. We often work on a day-to-day basis as if the material world were all that exists. And therefore, and the other thing is, we're all always have our noses pressed right up against the glass of our daily work. I'm doing the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And so sometimes it's hard to take a step back, as you're doing on this wonderful conference day, to rest in the Lord and to remember why you do what you do and what its ultimate purposes are. And so when we think about work, well, let me back up. So if you happen to be a stay-at-home mom who is here because you're thinking about work, or you're being pressured into work, then I want you to listen carefully to what I'm about to say, which is, all the people in the world who are pressuring you to work outside the home, they work for you secretly. We forget this, but here, let me explain what I mean by that. There was a time, centuries ago, when every household had to provide everything for itself. And in fact, the very word economy comes from a Greek word that has to do with the household, right? And so it refers to all the necessary activity, economics in this Greek sense, all the necessary things that have to happen in order for everybody in the household to have what they need to live. So it used to be the case that every family, in order to eat, planted crops, hunted game, spun its own cloth, and think about all the different things, you know, generated its own electricity once we got there, right? And there was a division of labor in that household, and the household was by necessity not a nuclear household. It included multiple generations, and it also included servants and their families, not slaves, servants and their families, because it was kind of almost a little, depending on the poverty or wealth of the family, almost a little corporation in and of itself in terms of the number of people that were being cared for by doing all those things, because it takes a lot to, you know, draw the water and spin the cloth and make the food and all of those things. Business, as we understand it today, is a form of task specialization by which all the things that this household used to have to do by itself, it now outsources to other things, right? So now, instead of a servant and a whole servant's family, I just have a dishwasher, right, that I load and unload. So all of that increasing specialization has radically changed our lifestyle. It's radically changed the way our lives are organized, but it has not changed the essential nature of what's going on, right? That is, all the economic activity in the world exists to provide households with what they need to live well. We don't think about it in those terms because, as I said, we're materialists, so now we only think about how and what, and we rarely ask ourselves the questions, how does this arise? How did this phenomenon come to be? And towards what is it ordered? And so the answer to the question of the economy is it's ordered towards the common good in the sense of everybody having what they need in order to flourish. So here is my very bold claim. It is not necessary for a woman to, quote unquote, contribute to the world of work. On the contrary, the world of work exists in order for her to provide what she needs for herself and her household. And even in practical terms, now I'm coming to your question, because so far you don't like what I've said, I'm guessing. Or I know you don't disagree, but it's like it's not helping you. So I'm just clearing this out so then we can talk about the other thing, right? And so, and even in material terms, the huge revolution in wealth, what economists call the great enrichment, that took place from about roughly the beginning of the 19th century until today, has taken us from a time in life where 90% of the whole world's population lived in what's called abject poverty, which is today we define it as living on less than $2 a day. There was a time up until about 1850, up until about the time of the Industrial Revolution, and that 90% of the world lived in abject poverty, and 10% of the world had 10% of the world had all the world's wealth. Since the time of the discovery that natural resources and owning land are not actually the source of wealth, the real source of wealth is the human person. Because the human person, whether it's the muscles and the brawn to do stuff, or the creativity, the artistry, the problem solving that it takes to design, to create, to solve problems, to innovate, that's where, when we talk about capitalism, capital comes from the word head, right? And so it's just the human person is actually the source of wealth. And the most powerful and most important human resource that any country has, that any community has, is the people themselves within it. Not the natural resources, not whether or not you have a big vein of gold in them thar hills or anything like that. That's good, but you can have a country like Japan that has very, very little in terms of natural resources with a big booming economy. And we also have the opposite example. Let me not get too much distracted by that, except to say that today, in 2024, that discovery that it's actually the human person that is the head, that is the center of the economy, has brought us to a point where only 9%, the ratios have exactly reversed. 9% of the world's population now lives in abject poverty, and everybody else is above that abject poverty line. And that's because of the good of just human trade and discovery that, hey, it's not all about owning land, it's actually about what can be done with human creativity and work, right? So having said that, two-thirds of the world's wealth, two-thirds of wealth creation in a society comes not from natural resources, but from people. And since we do not pay parents to stay at home and raise their kids, every well-formed adult that a stay-at-home mom sends into the workforce is an enormous gift of wealth that she has given to her country at personal cost to herself. And there is nothing anybody owes anybody except respect for that, because the world, the whole economy and the wealth that all of us have depends on that phenomenon, that some people at least will put the work in of creating the people who are going to solve the world's problems and innovate and design and create, and that's where all of our wealth comes from, right? So if you're here because you feel peer pressure to work outside the home, or somebody's telling you that you've wasted your degree, I'm just telling you, get rid of that self-doubt. Get rid of it, don't doubt yourself. However, that's not the focus of this workshop, right? Having said that, I want to address two ways in which I see that women, I think, that working women, we all know that every woman works, right? And that there's very little that's harder than staying at home with kids in terms of just the daily pressures. But you know what I mean by working women, women who are working outside the home in some respect, I think also are deeply plagued by self-doubt in many ways, but two particular ways that I see. So the first question is, if I am a Catholic woman, should I be working outside the home at all, right? And my answer to that is, yes, you can, right? Si se puede, right? I love, and hope you do too, the beautiful and encouraging message that the Church has about the unique work of women. And I hope everybody here has had a beautiful experience today with the help of Melissa and others, to have a deep experience of how much Jesus loves you and wants to pour into you and is not mad at you, judging you, any of those things, right? But sometimes I marvel at individual Catholics or individual groups of Catholics' incredible capacity to turn a teaching that is deeply liberating and joyful into a stifling set of expectations that everybody live within the same rigid straitjacket. Right? So many, and the problem with that is that I know so, you heard in my bio, I'm also trained as a spiritual director, and there are all kinds of lovely Catholic women, people that I can see the Holy Spirit moving in their life. I can see how they're growing in holiness, and people who love Christ sincerely, and they're sincerely trying to live as all of you are, I can tell by your questions, as Christians in the world, and they are perpetually anguished that they are doing it wrong. And the it is two things, womanhood and Catholicism. And so I'm just here to tell you, you're doing it right. I'm not saying perfectly, right? The Lord is going to work with you on that, but you're doing it right. And so women at home worry constantly that they aren't making enough contribution to their families and to society. And women at work fear that they're neglecting their families or somehow not good enough to be good, really good Catholics. And if they're single, they wonder what their place is within the family of the Church. So you heard what I said about the value of just raising children. So I hope there's no doubt about that. But it does not follow that because raising a family is vitally important to work towards, is vitally important work, and it's the work towards which society as a whole is completely ordered, it doesn't follow that every fertile married woman should not be allowed to do anything else, right? Or that work outside the home isn't somehow a legitimate way for a woman to contribute to the good of her household. And my proof of that is just go right to Proverbs 31. If you've been in women's Bible studies, you're probably well aware of that, you know, the worthy woman, right? But in that, what that chapter describes is a woman who's in charge of the household of that first kind that we described, where the household has to provide everything for itself, the food and the clothing, and she's overseeing not just the raising of children, but she's also overseeing the spinning of the cloth and the growing of the grain and all of these things, right? And so she is, in a way, that Proverbs 31 woman is, yeah, she's raising her kids, but she's also managing a pretty large household. She is an excellent, from the scripture itself, human resources manager with a savvy eye for both business and real estate. And she's bringing to the household, the proverb says, profit, not loss, quote unquote. So the church's concern when she defends motherhood and femininity, her concern is that the effort to stamp out sex discrimination not also stamp out the heart of women and children in the process, but always take women's aspirations and the ways that they differ from men's into account. So women are going to harmonize the demands of work and family differently than men. And Pope Benedict used to say that respect for women means that mothers who wish, quote, who wish also to engage in other work should be able to do so with an appropriate work schedule and not have to choose between relinquishing their family life or enduring continual stress with negative consequences for one's own equilibrium and the harmony of the family, unquote. Right? It's not me. That's Pope Benedict, right? So the point is this. There is no Catholic injunction, and I worry about this because I see a lot of internet influencers now who are giving young women this message. There's no Catholic injunction against women working outside the home. There's only the caveat that in order for her to find it fulfilling, it has to be ordered toward the good of her own person and the good of her family. And presumably, Pope Benedict would have loved the situation in which we find ourselves now, where there's all kinds of creative solutions to being able to be at home and being able to put a genuine talent to work in the world, because people are doing things like telecommuting and job sharing. And in fact, I just interviewed for the podcast, it'll be in a couple episodes from now, but a woman named Regina Bethencourt, who runs this wonderful marketing agency called Tenuto. They do gorgeous work, I know, because they're promoting a bunch of, they're working with them to build the website and these things. But Regina was somebody who was working in New York as one of these, you know, basically 8 to 6 marketing people. And she said, as a young person, she saw a woman who was top of her game go out on maternity leave. And when she came back, she was put on the most menial projects and really held back. And for something, and it wasn't even rude intent, right? There wasn't deliberate and conscious sexism. There was just a sense of respect for the woman's work. We can't give her anything bold to do because she has to care for her kids. I mean, Gina didn't like that, and so she built her own company, and it does nothing but employ women who are extremely talented, have something that it's in them, like it's a repression of them not to be able to give it in some way, but they don't work 9 to 5. They share things, and they do a lot of creative double and triple coverage of projects so that if somebody's kid gets the flu, it's you know, the client never knows about it because the other people are right there to carry it. My point being that there's a lot of creative solutions to find ways to work in the way that you want to, and it's a mistake to think that we always have to conform to the way business has always been done. I'll say more about that in a minute. So not only is there no injunction against Catholic women working if they feel called to, if there's something in them that they feel called to give, but also just if the family life requires it, if in order to be able to afford to live, you know, in this expensive place so I can stay near to my parents to be able to take care of them, I need to make some money, that is all right, right? That's a good. So not only is it not, there's no injunction against it, it's also that we're needed. And Pope St. John Paul II said that society needs working women. And again, he was not asking women at home to suddenly flee the home in order to work, but he thought it was that in an increasingly technological and impersonal age, the world would need women to be present in every sector of society in order to call humanity to itself and in order to defend the goodness of the human person against this onslaught of philosophical materialism where we only look at people according to what they can give us. So that's point one, is if you feel called to work, if you need to work because your family situation depends upon it, there's nothing in Catholicism that requires that you not do so. And we have to have a little bit, so don't doubt yourself. That doesn't mean that we don't have to be real with each other, right? And real with young women about what the potential costs might be. And there's a meaning to the theology. There is a theology of the body, and it's not by accident that women's fertility declines drastically past the 20s, and we have to think about our careers in that way. It's not accidental or immaterial that in order to form healthy bonds of attachment, the mom is much more important to that role in the year 0 to 3 than the father is, and we have to be real about those things. But that doesn't mean that we can't be creative about the situations that we find ourselves in. So one, you're not barred, you know, and in fact, you're called to give your gifts and the world needs you. The second question that I think plagues a lot of, not here I'm speaking not just of women, but also of men, but plagues a lot of Christians in our day is, should I really be involved in a secular job? Hasn't the world gotten so dark that one, there's no place for me in my chosen field, and so I should go to ministry? And also that the work of evangelization is really demanding right now, and so shouldn't I start a ministry? Isn't that much more important than any kind of secular work? So I'm going to say five things about that. The first is, and it's amazing how, I'm going to say it's going to sound so obvious, but it's amazing how few of us actually believe it. You are free. I don't mean free because you live in the United States. I mean the Lord Jesus Christ has given you freedom. And I'm amazed at how many Catholic women will come in for just spiritual direction and they'll say something along these lines. I'm discerning, should I do this or should I do this, A or B? And A would be really hard for me. It would be a terrible burden. I can't imagine really loving it. You know, B would be so delightful and I would put all my gifts, you know, but this was the cross and it's the harder thing. So that's probably what the Lord wants for me. And I tear my hair, well, I don't literally tear my hair out. But it's, imagine the twistedness, the way that any man of our souls has twisted the relationship with the Lord, that we imagine that what we hate is what he wants for us, and that the desires of our heart are always to be squelched. Not true. I'm not saying that there's not crosses. We all know that sometimes Christian life can be brutal. We've all had faced death and illness and things that go wrong and things that happen in society that we really question. Of course, the Christ cross comes, but the desires of your heart count for something with Jesus. And if you have a gift that you're called to give, you might not be able to express it in exactly the way that you dreamed when you were 18. You might not be able to have every piece of it exactly the way you want, but he's going to help you guide it and give some kind of expression to it in some way. So you are free. And God's will is really not, I think a lot of us have this idea that I'm trying to do God's will, but I don't really know, and he kind of keeps it hidden from me, and at the end of my life on Judgment Day, I'm going to open the box, and it's either going to be, whoop, yeah, you got it right, or, so sorry, off you go. The Lord is not cruel like that, and he doesn't play games with us like that. The Lord's will, if you are not choosing something sinful, and if you are not deliberately blinding yourself to something obvious and ignoring that, but if you are with all honesty coming to know him as a personal friend and in dialogue with him in prayer, then he leaves you free. And his will for us is more like, you could do A, B, or C. Not D, because that's sinful, right? But you could do A, B, or C. That's what you choose? Great. I'm pouring out my grace into your heart for you to make that work. That's the path, and that's great. You are truly free. All of us, each of us is truly free. And yet we often don't think so. Second thing I'm going to say about whether or not you should go into ministry or perform a role in the secular world. Two things about that. I'm going to say something secular. Small businesses, which I don't mean by small, only five, because there's the economic definition means on the order of between five and, I've forgotten what the word is, but like 15,000 employees, something like that. So there's a wide range in terms of what economists call SMEs, small and medium size enterprises. But those enterprises they are the source materially, obviously not, they don't solve the spiritual problems, but they're the material source of the common good. Because the common good is, again, those conditions in secular society that allow all of us to flourish. And sometimes Christians make the mistake of only caring about spiritual things, but we need, ladies, we are in flesh spirits, we're body and soul, and you need to eat, and you need to have a roof over your head, and you also need to have not just the bare minimum, right? Because it's subsistence living to be just every day I know where my food and water's coming from. We all need at least enough security. We don't need to be massively wealthy. Nobody needs to be a multi-billionaire, right? But we all need to have at least as much economic security that we can take calculated risks, that we're not so terrified all the time about what's going to happen to us and our children, that we have room in our souls for spiritual things. St. John Chrysostom, great doctor of the church, in the early centuries, asked in a homily once, why are Christians so concerned about care for the poor? And he said, because a man who is starving does not have the wherewithal or the inner resources to really pray deeply in the way that Melissa just walked us through on two occasions today, right? Of course he can pray, he can offer things up. There's much beauty there. But to have that kind of relationship with the Lord requires at least enough financial security to not be terrified all the time about what's coming next. So don't depreciate or deprecate the good that it does to work in a business that's providing people with jobs. Young people today, my oldest son just got married, so this is very much on my heart, right? Thank you. Young people today are, in a way, terrified to get married. And there's some spiritual reasons why. Some of them come from broken homes and they're afraid to commit themselves, but they also are very doubtful that they can afford it. They're told all the time that it takes a bajillion dollars to raise a child, and they're not sure they can do it. And so they're terrified. And the joy that it is for most business owners to solve problems, to create little communities around the people that they serve, and then to also think about what they provide for their employees is deep. You know, when I learned I'm showing my age, but do any of you remember when Jay Leno was head of The Tonight Show? Yeah, so some of you do. When he retired, I was so moved one night. He and his wife it's known that they wanted to have kids, but were not able to. But he brought out, when he was on the last night and they were doing the retrospective, but there's this beautiful photo of, don't quote me on the number, but I think I'm right. There's something like 72 children that were born to Tonight Show employees over the course of the time that he was there. And he was so proud of that. Why? Because the Tonight Show was not just celebrity Jay Leno telling jokes. There was a business around that show and its promotion, and the fact that he, was a good steward of that business allowed him to provide security for all these young families and their 70 Q2 kids that exist, and are fed and having a good life, presumably, because Jay Leno did a good job at what he was doing, right? So don't underestimate the good that it is to simply do a secular job well. And sometimes we can over-spiritualize and think that all that matters is if you're directly doing something spiritual. I don't think that's true. But additionally, if you're unhappy with the way the culture is going, the best way to criticize is to create. It's not to just, to spend all your time bemoaning the way you think things should be or how terrible it is, but like my friend Regina, she just built a business a different way. And I'll tell you what, I've gotten to know a lot of businessmen who built their businesses a different way. The Sioka Center, the late Art Sioka, our benefactor, he's late, right? But one of the things, he's passed away. But one of the things that he always said was that the Sioka Center was the thing he was proudest of philanthropically. He said, that's the best donation I ever gave. It's the best thing I ever got going. But I know that the work that I did building up my company and not only employing and creating stability for all those families, but helping other people to achieve what I achieved, by noticing the talent in somebody and allowing that by giving them responsibility and work to do, I challenged them to excellence, I raised the bar, and I brought them to, I was a, at least facilitated a lot of the actualization of potential, right? And that's work at its best. This is standard church doctrine, right? That work changes us over time. It helps us to actualize our potential, and it helps us to, that achieving of excellence helps us to achieve all kinds of virtues, not only in the field in which we're actually working, but it also requires growth in interpersonal skills and maturity and all kinds of human things, beautiful human goods, are achieved through work. And you can build your business the way you want. So Art Sioka removed all sales incentives from his company because he said, I don't want people to have a transactional relationship with our customers. And the other thing he did was he set it up so that his successor, all of the successors in his company, don't get their big payout until the next successor has been successful for 3 years. So that removes the incentive to just, you know, sell it to the highest bidder and let the company be pulled apart. The company has to keep being good. It has to keep being excellent. And the old guy is deeply, deeply invested in the success and the training of the new guy, right? Now, he could never publicly trade his company because of that, because there are certain things that the market demands of you if you take your company public. And this is digression. This is not my argument that you should never take your company public or that there's never a reason to do so. I'm only saying that there's a lot of room, if you're willing to make sacrifices, to craft a business and build it the way you want. Another example I found really powerful is one of my colleagues' fathers is a, I think, fifth generation. They create places. It's a little bit better than assisted living, but these basically senior homes with whole landscapes. And I remember he came to visit our class and he said, I can never take my company public because there are rules about the relation, about ratios of salaries. He said, but in my places, we consider the custodial staff to be integral parts of the team. And so he said, my custodians are paid something like 4 to 5 times the market rate because we want them to think of keeping everything beautiful and taking care of everyone and have everybody having pride in the place that they're living. That's part of the company culture, right? So he could never take his company public and become a multi-billionaire, but it was important to him. He's a serious Catholic, and it was important to him to honor with the way his business does business, to honor the dignity of the people that he serves, and also to pay his custodians for the work that he was asking them to do. I can go on and on and on, but my point is only that if you want to do things differently, just do things differently. You actually can. There's a lot of freedom to do things differently. A fourth point. Actually, I don't know if I'm on point four. My notes are scrambled. We should be careful, if we're Catholic, not to put limits on what the Lord wants us to do because of our own notions of piety. And I'm going to give you a very concrete example. Years ago, like 25 years ago, I was talking to the woman, brilliant, brilliant, child psychologist. At the time, she was at Johns Hopkins, but she had the idea for the seed of what eventually became Divine Mercy University, the graduate school in Virginia that trains spiritual directors and Catholic counselors and what have you. And I can remember so clearly her talking to me in my office, and she'd say, oh, I love her, and I'm not mocking her. This is a beautiful impulse. But I just remember the conversation so clearly because she said, I am never going to take a dime for this work. The Holy Spirit is doing this, like he's doing all of this. And this was in the founding period, and all these different things were going right. And that school was founded, you know, by Catholics who took their faith seriously and were doing holy hours. And every time they had to, they would do a holy hour before a meeting with a benefactor, or with any time any kind of accreditation had to take place, they would do holy hours. And Gladys, my friend, would take the phone call standing in front of the statue of Our Lady and just giving every word to her, like a lot of piety. I just remember saying to her, be careful. Because if you take the position, the hard and fast position that you are never going to take a dime, you will never take a salary, then what you're saying is that the limit of how much this thing can grow is only what you can afford to give while still maintaining your old job and still doing what's necessary, right? But just be careful about being so afraid of money, thinking that it's so tainted, instead of thinking that it's a tool that can be put to use, that you don't put a limit on something artificially that the Lord actually wants to grow. I am not so naive that I'm making promises that everything will always go your way. But I want you to think about Sandra Day O'Connor, as particularly those of you who work with young women. I want you to think about, so the first woman justice of the Supreme Court, Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. And if you're really old time, I'm going to give you another example of the woman Phyllis Schlafly, who was head of a reform movement that was defending against radical feminism in the 70s. I am not holding these three women out. Only one of the three was Catholic, to my knowledge. I'm not holding them out as saints. I am not holding them out because I expect any of us in the room agrees with things that they did. I'm not holding them out for that reason. I'm only holding them out to say that they were people who raised their children first and then still achieved the highest level that was possible in their career. And so just don't listen to people who tell you that that's not possible, or that if you have children now, or if you prioritize your family now, that there's not, it's all over for you at the ripe old age of 25 or 35. That's ridiculous.
51. And I'm not going to be done for the next 8 years.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? You can build your own life. You just have to have enough of a sense of yourself in Christ that you have a little bit of a top hide about what the world tells you, but also what the Catholic world tells you. Because it's hard if you're in a homeschooling community that's a beautiful community and you start to realize that homeschooling is not working for your family, that's a hard step to go, nope, not doing that anymore, right? Because again, women are filled with self-doubt and we easily take the decisions of others as some kind of rebuke to us, which it isn't. It's just a realization that we each have to we all have to live our own vocation, right? If you're called to matrimony, you can't live matrimony. You can only live marriage to that particular husband, who is not my husband, and is not her husband, and is not your husband. And you're going to have to make your family life work according to, you know, charity, and according to the Ten Commandments, and according to the Beatitudes, but not according to what I call the one holy Catholic and apostolic lifestyle, which does not exist. It doesn't exist. And you can do something that's different than what the other people in your friend group are doing without not being holy, right? It's not a betrayal. Finally, let's back up a little bit and think about the mission of the church in the world. The mission of the church in the world is to transform secular, well, obviously it's to bring everybody to Jesus, but it's to transform secular society as well, not just church groups, secular society until all, every little corner of the globe is transfigured in Christ. So of course the church has to preach Jesus Christ, but it also has, and this is in the Decree on the Laity, three other worldly things that it does. It's called to heal and elevate the dignity of the human person, to strengthen the seams of human society, and to imbue everyday life with deeper meaning and importance. Let me give you two examples of people I think did that well in my life. I think about my Catholic woman, OBGYN, whose faith and her openness to life and her belief in the dignity of the human person accompanies patients through the joys and the sorrows of the life cycle. She never loses sight of the woman that she's treating, even in the midst sometimes of what can feel like really dehumanizing tests and procedures. And she doesn't give lectures about it, but it is noticeable, and people have talked about it, that her patient-centered practices have spread to her colleagues in the hospital where she has privileges. And so watching her in action and watching her effect on her colleagues and on her profession and the effect that she has on her patients, there's no doubt that she is doing what the Lord called her to do. And how dare any of us say, you should be at home raising your kids, you shouldn't be in the office. To take a wildly different example, I think about a woman, she's now retired, but I think about a woman named Colette, who was a clerk in my local Giant Food. I don't think, in the same way that my OBGYN would say she was called, she had this deep call to medicine and to OBGYN, I don't think Colette would say, my calling was to bag groceries, right? She had experienced that as, not as a career, but as a job, right? And we have to be very realistic that a lot of jobs are jobs more than they are careers. But Colette had this, she was a deep Christian, and she had this Christ-like way of interacting with patrons that made her humble work into a genuine apostolate. I have seen customers get out of a short line to get into a longer line for Colette just to be able to interact with her, because she would be like, oh, baby, how's it going today? And she made everybody in that neighborhood feel like a community. So she was bagging groceries, but she was also giving out an experience of Christian kindness, and maybe for some people, the only kindness they would receive that day, right? So I'm not talking, when I talk about this work, I'm not talking only about people who have work that the world sees as exalted. I'm saying even humble work that is feeding the family and helping to create jobs and helping to contributing to the common good is doing something really beautiful. Ladies, if you have a calling on your heart that the Lord is asking you to, I think about Melissa Foley, right? She's doing what the Lord asked her to do. I'm not asking her to leave what she's doing and go do something secular. But can we transform the world, every corner of it, if every single one of us is in ministry or overly afraid of the secularized world, right? Can every single one of us be on the parish council? I don't think so. And nor do I think that's really the role of the church, because what the church decree on the laity says is that the privileged role of doing this transformation of secular society belongs to the laity. We can go where priests and religious can't necessarily go, and the world needs us, right? And the whole premise of having the reason you have to have a little bit of a thick skin about what people tell you or how they judge you, and judge yourself instead by where you are with the Lord, is what the sacramental life means is this. If we're living in grace, it means that I receive the Lord's life in me, and then I'm supposed to bear that out to the world. It's not just words that we say at the end of Mass we're told, you know, go forth, right? We were supposed to go forth. And if the Lord's life is in us, what that means is that in you, Christ changes the diapers. He rides the metro. He fills out the paperwork, right? All of the things, both great and small, that are part of the everyday life, Jesus wants to do them, and he wants to do them in us. And so that's the sense in which we are each called to work, to allow him to work, you know, to allow him to ride the metro in us, and maybe that's another proof that it couldn't be the truth that there'd be only one Catholic and one Holy Catholic and Apostolic lifestyle, because the Lord wants to be everywhere, right? He wants to be everywhere, and so there's a place for us, for each of us, everywhere. I find that I'm haunted by a question that this French historian, not that I'm a great history reader, but I happen to read this one book, Régine Pernod, poses at the conclusion of her book that's called Women in the Days of the Cathedrals. She says this, quote, "Copying is a good school exercise. It has never produced a masterpiece. Why do we women not invent solutions adapted to our own time, just as other women did in their time? Have we nothing original to propose to the world when we face the grave deficiencies that torment it?" So you see the question she's asking there, that sometimes we let ourselves, I think, too much off the hook, because we say, here's my favorite saint, and I'm going to try to imitate her in everything that she did. But you're supposed to imitate her in her virtue, right? Imitate her in her, you know, I want to imitate Saint Therese in her deep love of Christ, in her profound trust in him, in her abandonment to him, and realizing, not letting the enemy of her soul make her worried about any of her failings. But I'm not supposed to be the child of a lace maker, right? Which is the kind of imitation that we try to accomplish. In our time, because as I said, you have to live your marriage to your husband who is not like your girlfriend's husband, right? And I live in this city, not that. And I have these kids with these particular needs. And so I have to meet those real needs with holiness, but with prudence. In our time, or in any time, the ordinary way that most people encounter Jesus Christ is not through explicit teaching, but in the goodness of some Christian who crosses their path and touches her heart. Pope Benedict XVI put it this way when he was talking to bishops in Fatima. He said, quote, "The courageous and integral appeal to principles is essential and indispensable. Yet simply proclaiming the message does not penetrate to the depths of people's hearts. It does not touch their freedom. It does not change their lives. What attracts is, above all, the encounter with believing persons who, through their faith, draw others to the grace of Christ by bearing witness to him." So my point is that it's not the form our work takes that is decisive for the impact that we have for the church in the world and for our own families, but it's who we are while we are working and whether we know that we are his. A person who knows Christ intimately through prayer and the sacraments will have much more creativity and spiritual energy for her tasks, more insight into what her priorities really ought to be as opposed to what all the external pressures might say, and will radiate his goodness in ways that she's not even aware of. And one of the questions that I asked for our small groups is to ask you to share some of those stories, because I bet you have some examples of somebody who said, "When you did this, when you said this, it had a profound impact on me, and you didn't have any clue that it was even important what you were doing." We can radiate God's goodness to in ways that we're not even aware to the people that we meet each day. And it's just possible that you're called, that you're not called to work in your parish so much as to be out in the world, because how shall they hear the good news if there is nobody who will take it to them? So with that, can you tell us how much time we have left? I could take up some questions. We have about 10 minutes for questions or comments, because I obviously didn't get into any specifics because I don't think I can offer them to you. I think you have to think in your own life and pray in your own life about what you're called to do. But what I want you to see is that work in a secular world is not somehow lesser than in the eyes of the church. And if we want to create conditions up for the common good, in certain respects, it might be more important.